Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard. Just about 10 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here in Studio 4. Good morning, sir.
Raining.
A mess.
Forecast is not great for the weekend.
No.
Beach day. Stay away from the ocean. People drown, and I saw some people going in at night when there's no lifeguards, and a couple people didn't come back out. The pools are open. Lots of parks have showers. So even though the weather's not going to be great, if you wanted to go, I suppose you can go swimming. But you just shouldn't go in the ocean. The Parks Department hasn't closed the beaches yet, but they'll take a look at it. The storm we have right now is not Danny. It's a storm before Danny.
Danny's tomorrow. Late tonight and tomorrow.
Right. That forecast is not great for tomorrow. Sunday actually looks a little bit better.
I've seen your emergency management folks are, kind of coalesced and ready to go and got the paper and books out.
Yeah, this does not look like it's going to be a big hurricane. It's not classified as a hurricane. Last time I heard, it was 45-mile-an-hour winds.
Which is like a bad storm.
Yeah, it didn't seem to be growing. It's going to be, a good day to stay home, catch up on a book, all that pile of stuff you wanted to put away. Here's a good chance to do it.
You mean that stuff on my desk at home?
All that stuff, or all the stuff I'm going to read when I sit down to read it and start snoring 3 minutes late.
Exactly. Now, tomorrow, you're going to be busy. You're going up to the funeral for Ted Kennedy.
I'm
going
to go to the funeral for Teddy Kennedy. Obama's coming and going to give the main eulogy. I'm sure it'll be a big funeral. It's in Boston. I might go visit my mother since I'm up there.
Did you know the senator at all? I mean, did you have dealings with him?
We worked with him a lot because a lot of the issues he cares about influence the city in terms of how we provide our services. I actually know him from working in Boston. We've done some events there together and name some things together and that sort of thing. He's been sick for a while. I was in Washington when the president signed this bill about the service, which really got us to do NYC service. That was named, he and Hatch did it, and then Hatch said, I don't want my name on it. This should be just the Kennedy bill, which is a nice thing. Orrin Hatch and Teddy Kennedy came into the Senate. They were two closest friends and of absolutely opposite ends of the political spectrum.
Well, that's one of the things that people have been pointing out about the senator. That's not unusual.
The best thing about Teddy Kennedy and Orrin Hatch is when they were campaigning, they said they'd do something if elected, and when they got elected, they did the same thing. They did what they promised, even when it wasn't popular. I might not have liked what either did at any one given point in time, but I respect both of them for doing that. That's good government.
On a more upbeat note, our Staten Island Little Leaguers, though not going to the finals, did pretty well for themselves.
I was there on Southern Shore of Staten Island last night when the bus arrived. Had a lot of high fives with the kids and the parents. The kids are 12 years old, with the exception, I think, two on the team are 11 years old. So the 11-year-olders can play on the team next year.
Right.
12 years olders have to go off to, there's a Pee Wee League or some other leagues later on. But and incidentally, on Staten Island, the 11-year-olders won their championship. So, they've got a chance at a repeat. Not very likely, given the competition. There's so many teams around the country that, nobody wins twice in a row. But hope springs eternal, and they're going into it with the same odds, maybe even better odds than anybody else, so maybe they'll do it. But it was a nice day, and there was a lot of press, and the kids, we're going to have a little parade on Staten Island next week for them, and we're going to give them the keys to the city. That was a big deal.
That is a very big deal if you're 12 or 11 years old.
Absolutely. Why not do it? There was a team in Harlem, from Harlem, as I remember, about 4 or 5 years ago, that went to the World Series as well, and I remember going down, and it was a lot of fun.
It must have meant a lot to them to have you down there for their opening game.
What I said to
the parents
was,
I mean, the kids probably couldn't care less.
No, I went to
Michael who?
I went to the dugout first and shook their hands and gave them high fives and wished them all the best. With the parents, I joked. I sat there. The popcorn was great, but you couldn't get a beer. And I think that's a big part. I love going to a baseball game and sitting there with a beer and a box of popcorn.
You're a big popcorn fan.
Yeah, and beer goes well with it. Yes,
it does indeed. I have started this program today with mixed feelings because this will be the last one that we will be doing till after the election back in November.
You know, you're going to be able to survive.
I think we'll probably be able to struggle through. Yes,
maybe your ratings will go up.
Maybe if they do, I won't tell you.
Quite the contrary, I'll know because you won't invite me back.
No, you are welcome. And I am assuming you will be coming back.
But I will be listening to see how well you do. What are you going to do with that extra hour on Friday mornings,
we'll
8 to 9?
We'll have to do some political thing where we're going to bash somebody for something. We'll try and stay away from you as best we are able.
Now, I will miss it. You do. A lot of people say to me, oh, I heard you on John Gambling. And I always joke, yes, you're the other listener.
Thank you.
But you do have a big audience, all kidding aside.
We do indeed.
And I think that I have fun doing it.
I think it's one of the best things that I've done, and I'm honored.
How long did Rudy do a show with you?
I don't know. Well, I came in towards the end of Rudy's reign, and so
use the word reign.
Yeah, well, that's true. We don't. Anyway, his term in office,
right.
near the end of his term in office. So I guess I did it a couple of years, possibly, with Rudy before he took over. And it's been nice of you to come here.
How many shows have we missed? I mean, you're on vacation, but...
Not many.
I think one or two, there was a funeral or something,
exactly.
Where I couldn't go.
Yeah. No, you're a trooper. It was. It's easier coming here because we're just a couple of blocks down from City Hall. But when I was up at the other station,
the other one
wasn't
bad because I just took the subway straight up to Penn Station.
I appreciate it, and I hope that we will be able to continue it together after the hiatus.
Well, we'll have to. My agent will talk to you. You know, given
have your people call my people.
Not looking forward to it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang in there. We'll get right back in just a second, and of course this will be your final opportunity for a couple of months to ask the mayor some questions. So if you want to get online, get in, get early. 20 minutes after 8 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg on a Friday in August. Mr. Mayor, the MTA still has a problem with the 181st Street station.
The MTA has a problem with lots of stations because they don't have any capital money to fix it up. And this labor settlement puts another $350 million per year hole in their budget. And the arbitrator said, because he's supposed to know where the money comes from, take it out of capital.
Well, there's no capital.
Well, there is no capital, and if there is, it's not. Fundamentally, that means the roofs keep falling in.
Have you gotten any update on when they might open up that 181st Street station?
No.
Okay. Because they're obviously just trying to fix the roof here.
Yeah.
I thought your idea this week of, especially for seniors, but others that use the city service of AccessoRide. And which you pointed out cost $60 per ride to the city, and using regular taxis and having it subsidized by the city for $20 a ride, bingo.
More the MTA's money. The city does 20%, it's our money. It's our money, whether it goes through the city or the MTA. You can't find anybody that likes, that's not overstating it, but a lot of people don't like AccessoRide. They say, you know, when you schedule it, it doesn't show up, it's 2 hours late, it's whatever. And a lot of people say there's only one person on a big bus, although they do have smaller cars as well. We're going to try. I had lunch with Helena Williams, the acting head of the operating head of the MTA under Dale Hummerdinger. And, we agreed staffs would sit down and see if we can't work out something where we'll try it, you know, take 1,000 people. Now, it's not perfect. Most taxis are not handicap accessible, but for AccessoRide, 80% of the people don't need that.
Well, I was going to say,
not perfect, but
it's not just for handicapped people.
Right. I mean, you see, you know, it doesn't help everybody, but if you helped 80% of the people, that's better than helping none of the people. And someday, maybe all taxis will be accessible. The yellow cabs have the swipe ability for a card, so we could give you a different kind of card, but it would be the same technology. The black cabs don't. The yellow cabs are mainly in Manhattan, black cabs in the other boroughs. so we can work. Maybe some of the black cabs will, in the interest of getting more business, because the dispatcher will only call those that have the technology, maybe they'll put the technology in at their expense. So it's something to work on, but anything's better than sitting here and doing nothing.
Do you have a number, an approximate number of how many people use AccessoRide?
I forget the numbers, but the number that I remember is the MTA's cost is projected to go from roughly three. Is it possible? I forget the number, but it was an. I want to say $300 million up to $600 million. Is that? I guess that is possible. Over the next 5 years, it's going to double, and the city's share is going from $50 million to $100 million. That's exactly right. Over the right now, we pay $50, they pay $300, and the projections are because the number of people signing up is, you know, the number of seniors and people signing up.
If you could cut the number in half,
it'd be enormous.
It's enormous, yeah, right to the bottom line.
There will be people who will say, well, it doesn't help everybody, so don't do it. There will be people that say, it's new, don't try it. But you just got to do something rather than sit around and complain. And this, if it works, would be a big win. You'd save a lot of money, and you'd provide a lot better service. Some people say, well, if you provide a better service, more people will use it, and you won't save the money. But even if that were the scenario, at least you'd be helping a lot more people.
You would probably at some point have to, thinking this down the road a piece, to use the bad pun, probably need more cabs.
I don't know whether that's true. There's 13,000 yellow cabs, as I remember, and I forget the number of
black
cabs.
Cars as well?
No. This would work for black cars if the black cars put in the technology. The whole idea is you would qualify for a car the same way you qualify for AccessoRide now. So that vetting process we go through, the MTA goes through. And instead of calling AccessoRide, the same dispatcher would call a black cab, or you could go out in the street and hail a yellow cab, but you would use a credit card, except it would be a credit card that the MTA/city pays, but only up to a certain amount. Maybe it would put a guaranteed tip on. I mean, there's some details you got to work out, because you don't want somebody to, with the city card, say, oh, I'm going to give the guy 100% tip, or the woman driving the cab. But a reasonable tip you could put on as well. So, but you got to try it. The other thing we're trying to do with the MTA is have the city's 311 service take over their information service. Right now, if you call 311 and you ask questions about MTA service, we switch you to the MTA's call takers, which I'm told sometimes they're there and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just overwhelmed. They get too many. And it's a lot of expense for the MTA. We could take that over and have just, if you give us the information, if the MTA gives the city the information, our existing 311 operators can answer those questions as well. Now, then you say, well, what about the people who work for the MTA as call takers? They'd have to find other things to do within the MTA, or maybe we could take them over. I don't know. We'd have to work out something. But a lot of these things, when you try to make things better, there's a component which you don't think about, and that is the people currently providing service don't want to lose their jobs. And so then you got to decide, well, are we trying to keep people employed or provide a service. The post office the other day, I read a story.
There's a balance there somewhere. I'm not sure where it is.
Yeah, I mean, you want a workforce that's got some incentives and thinks you're loyal to them. I'm a big believer in loyalty to your employees if you possibly can, but there is a limit. Sometimes you can't. I read a story the other day, the post office, some post offices, they're taking out stamp machines. And then people can, if you want to buy stamps, you go up to the window. It's the only organization I've heard of in recent days is going away from technology.
That's why they're losing $7 billion a year.
That may be. I don't know.
Come on. I mean, and again, that is an issue of too many employees and not enough business. I mean, that's a math equation. Mm. There's some politics, I suppose, in that equation as well.
Well, everybody's screaming, save money, but don't close.
Correct.
You know,
it's just insane. You can't do that. You have to.
That's why Congress invented a base closing commission, or the Albany legislature invented a hospital closing commission, or the MTA was invented. The MTA was invented because the elected officials were tired of the public screaming about ever higher fares and ever diminishing and or deteriorating services.
Give someone
and
to point
so they
the
said, well, let's have an independent authority that nobody has to that we can say we have nothing to do about it. And then, of course, everybody yells and screams and pressures them. So.
Earlier this week, there was some questions about vendors in front of the Museum of Modern Art. My question is not specifically to them, but it appears to me, and again, this is totally unscientific, it's just anecdotal, that there are more and more vendors on the streets of New York
City.
Well,
right outside here, it's a
cavalcade.
I was looking this morning as I came into the building. In three different directions, there were vendors lined up. They now have all sorts of electric signs on their
carts. Well, they have little generators.
And they have generators. I mean, if you're a store owner selling coffee or sandwiches or something, paying rent, paying taxes, you got to sit there and say, wait a second, why does the city allow this?
Because there's no property tax being paid, obviously, for the real estate.
There's certainly no property tax. I hope they're paying sales taxes.
You would hope.
They're supposed to. The problem that gets in the press is in front of the Metropolitan Museum, the Metropolitan, the Parks Department, gave out licenses. There is an old law that says that vets can have stands as of right, basically. And some of them are run by vets, but some of them are just abusing them. They hire a vet to stand there and has nothing to do with it. You know, that's as much fraud as minority and women-owned businesses, where you just hire somebody that's a minority or a woman and say, oh, they're the name person. But fundamentally, that's not the purpose. The purpose is to actually help vets or, in the case of minority and women-owned businesses, help minorities and women.
Do we need more bureaucracy to manage vendors?
Everything is more bureaucracy and more laws and regulations, which requires oversight and then gives you another story for your radio show. That's what you can fill your time with for the next few months.
I'm already taking notes on that.
Right.
Absolutely. 8:30 is our time. Let's take the break here while we're right on the mark at 8:30. 24 minutes now before 9 o'clock. John and Mayor Michael Bloomberg here one more time till after the election. Mr. Mayor, Joe Bartlett in our WOR News Department over the last couple of days has done a story about a very controversial issue, very emotional issue, and that's cell phones in schools. I don't have to tell you that. You and I have discussed it before. But the thing that they uncovered was that supposedly upwards of half of the principals don't enforce the ban.
Well, I don't know whether they do. They should. I mean, the bottom line is classrooms are for learning. We have 80,000 teachers who have trained and work as hard as anybody can, and cell phones are a distraction. They're used for games. They're used for sharing information that they're not supposed to be sharing. They just don't belong in the classroom any more than they belong... that you should be texting when you're driving. That one's dangerous for your life. I suppose you could make the case that cell phones, are hurting long term how you're going to be able to survive.
Now, we had one mother who said that she actually searches out schools where the principals don't enforce it, so that her child, it's so important to her that to have that phone.
I would suggest, not going to criticize the mother, but in the end, how well the child does in school is going to be a big factor in how well they do in the real world for the rest of their lives, more important.
Speaking of that, your troubled school list is getting shorter.
Going in the right direction. You listen to people that don't want to acknowledge success. They can always find something wrong. We have 1,100,000 students. We have 1,500 schools, 80,000 teachers, whatever. 1,500 principals, 30,000 assistant principals, whatever the number is, or 3,000. I'm sure there's always going to be problems. But things are going in the right direction. And now, thanks to the Albany legislature and the governor's signature, we can continue the progress that we've made. And I really am optimistic for the future.
Tell me about the SAT scores. I'm sure you saw the numbers on those.
One of the things we've tried to do is we've tried to get lots more kids taking the test, some of whom are going to decide that college is not for them. That's okay. But at least if they take the test, they start thinking about it and they find out how well they do. It's another data point for teachers. We have an awful lot more kids taking the SATs, and kids who in the past, nobody's ever encouraged them and nobody ever said to them, you know, college is an option for you. We just assumed as a society that they couldn't learn, weren't learning, weren't going to learn, and sort of walked away from them, and we shouldn't do that. And so now every, I think it's the 10th and 11th grade, 10th grade, they take the PSATs for free, and then some of those take the SATs. And, you know, some are going to do, the bigger you make the group, the lower the average score is probably going to be, because in the past, those who were at the top of their classes always took it, and those further down seldom took it. And I think we're in a lot better place than we were before. But the numbers are what they are, and they're another data point for the teachers to keep working.
And it's interesting. There still is a distance between the scores, and I'm not just talking SATs, but between Asian, white, black, there is a difference.
And Latino, yeah, absolutely. Latino. But we've cut that gap in half. It's amazing. For decades, nobody did anything. Nobody ever thought you could make a dent in it. It was just sort of conventional wisdom, that's the way it is. And when we came into office, I remember having a long conversation with Dennis Walcott and Joel Klein about gifted and talented schools. We had two gifted and talented schools, basically, Stuyvesant and Bronx Science. Great schools. But they're gifted and talented kids all over the city. And so now we have a number of them. Are they hard to get into? You bet they're hard to get into. That's the whole idea, for the very best students. But very best students can come from any neighborhood and any ethnicity and any background. It's tougher if you come from a family where education's not prized. It's tougher if you come from a family where you don't have two parents and can help you and whatever. But that doesn't mean kids can't get through that, and we just didn't pay attention to them or didn't give them the opportunities before, and today we do.
What happens to those schools that are on the deficient list, the subpar list?
They either get fix themselves, or we close them and we change management. So there was a story, one of the papers today, of a teacher who took one of these schools that was dangerous, an elementary school, really had enormous problems, and she's just turned it around. She earned an A. Now, you want the story? Only half the kids are at grade level. That's right. But when she took over the school a couple of years ago, a quarter were at grade level. That's phenomenal progress. Is it where you want to be? No. If somebody wants to criticize, that's what they'll focus on. Oh, it's terrible, only half. Think about where we came from. This is a great principal, and I assume because of the results, she's got a group of great assistant principals and teachers and custodians and traffic safety officers and parent coordinators. I mean, everybody works together on all this. And parents who've gotten energized and said, you know, my kid can get a better education. I'm going to help the school, tell them what's going on, and let them do what they do, and that is decide how to educate my kid in the academic world, and I'll take care of the kids at home.
The World Trade Center, I'm sure you saw that. Did you see the statistics? One of these questioning services asked New Yorkers about the World Trade Center and the Port Authority and the timelines, and there was no confidence, 61%.
Well, I hope that it's interesting. The public doesn't have confidence. Hopefully they'll be wrong. It'd be nice if they were. And we'll find out down the road. I can tell you that the World Trade Center Memorial, which is being built by the Port Authority, but we have this foundation that's raised the money and provides some of the guidance and has a lot of input. The World Trade Center Memorial is basically on schedule and on budget. And that doesn't mean it's going to stay there. We're going to keep working. It's always the danger that something goes wrong. The definition of being ready for the 10th anniversary is that the Underground Museum won't be done, but the plaza will be, with names and waterfalls and trees. There's a corner of it that may not get done because underneath is the Calatrava, part of the Calatrava Path Station. And even if it's done, it'll have to get ripped up again after the ceremony. ceremony to continue to work there. There's access points that won't be done. There's a lot that won't be done, but the basics of the memorial. I was looking at it yesterday from a municipal building, sort of a sixth floor. I forget which floor, maybe sixth floor. And, you know, the decking is there. They haven't poured the cement yet, but the steel is in for an awful lot of it. You can see where the two towers were because that's where the two voids are. And they're progressing along. Joe Daniels, the president, is working hard.
Something's going on because right down here on, I guess it's Greenwich Street, each morning when I come in, there are trucks with steel beams lined up on them waiting to deliver
the
goods.
So things are going along. They've dug out the Eastern bathtub, and now I think they just turned it over to Silverstein. But that's still a big arguments going on there. As to whether or not and who will pay and how many towers, office towers you build. I last weekend ran into a guy who works for one of the big developers in the city, and we were talking about it. And he said they are starting to rent more space. You know, we're not going back to the world we had a couple of years ago very quickly. But things seem to have bottomed, and I still think that if you go and make an investment now and start a new building, by the time you get that building done at the World Trade Center or on the far west side or elsewhere in the city, the economy will be back and people are going to need space, and you're going to have the space and be able to have some pricing power and do very well. I mean, my company, in the building that we're in, 10 more floors became available, and we took them. Because down the road, they're not going to be available, and hopefully we'll grow. And, the time to buy something is when everybody else wants to sell it. Of course, you say, if everybody else wants to sell it, it's not the time to buy. Well, you know, when everybody else wants to buy, you can't. Yeah.
It all depends.
I mean, you have to be prudent about your investments, and you can't bet the store, because supposing you are wrong. But, you know, the great progress has been made in this city in downtown, the Empire State Building and Central Park, you know, those are the two examples. There's a whole bunch of others that were started and built in terrible economic climates and turned out to be okay.
This week, an interesting demonstration of the problem that political leaders have when it comes to dealing with the things that they have no control over. I'm talking about the swine flu and the White House predictions this week from their advisory, the President's Advisory Commission, predicting all sorts of terrible things.
Well, Harold,
90,000 deaths across the country, and then your former health commissioner, now head of the CDC, saying, whoa, wait a minute. Those things seem way out of whack.
You know, number one, all these things are predictions or possibilities. Harold Varmus, who runs the President's Commission, happens to be a New Yorker, runs, I think, special surgeries, is one of the hospitals. Memorial Sloan Kettering's, I think, is his. A Nobel Prize winner, a very smart guy, very hardworking. He really is a class act. His group came up with a worst-case scenario. Well, worst-case scenarios, for example, we have a worst-case scenario.
Yeah, but people believe this stuff because they don't focus on it.
Well, that's the trouble. Do you want information out? Or, you know, what's worse than that is if government decides that the public isn't smart enough to get the information and the government says we're smarter than they are. I don't think that's better. I think I'd rather have the problem of how do you explain it, and sometimes understanding the public is going to misunderstand, but it's not the government's job to... There are exceptions if you're in war and that sort of thing, but let me give you an example. There's always a possibility of a water tunnel collapsing. Let's say you had an earthquake. If that happened, you'd have to evacuate big parts of the city because nobody can live in a building where the fire department couldn't put out a fire or you don't have water to cook or for sanitation purposes. That's always that possibility. But we're not evacuating the city. We're building a third water tunnel. It's been going on for a few decades. It'll get done in the next couple of years. It's very close to being finished. That'll give us a backup. I suppose you could have an earthquake that could take out all water tunnels. You don't evacuate now. You just, you know, some things you can't prepare for, some things you prepare for, but you hope you'll never...
In one of the papers this morning, there is a call by the columnist to almost close the schools down before there's even a problem.
You know, there have been a number of those. All of the studies say that and the Department of Education and CDC and the City of New York are sort of all in agreement that shutting down a school doesn't really stop the spread. It may limit the spread a little bit, but the problem is that you've got parents that have some parents would leave their kids home alone because they can't miss a day of work. That's dangerous. Or they'll miss a day's pay. That's not good. Keeping the kids at home is not practical. The kids go to the park where they are likely to get it. By the time you know that there's a lot of flu, it's probably too late. The kids have probably already been infected. And, you know, if you listen, Kathleen Sebelius, the Health and Human Services Secretary, said that shutting down a school doesn't stop the virus from spreading. We looked at our numbers last spring, and it may or may not slow it down a touch. But what we plan to do is we have different categories. When you get to a certain number of cases, we do more investigation. When you get to a X number of cases, there is a level at which you would close it down, partially just because
it
doesn't operate anybody. Right. But Arne Duncan, our Secretary of Education, has said the same thing. Want to make sure that the kids are safe and taken care of. This virus, so far, the interesting thing is it is spread like all viruses through the young, but it has not basically attacked the elderly, who are the ones who usually suffer from a virus. And nobody knows what's going to come back. But, you know, we've got a program where there is a vaccine being made. I don't know when. It's probably going to be too late, but sometime around Thanksgiving is the estimates when we'd have doses. We have a list of criteria. If you're pregnant or elderly or have asthma or things like that, we have a priority list as to who we think should get the vaccine and what doctors should do and what the city will do. Our Office of Emergency Management and Department of Health and Mental Hygiene and Department of Education. I've had another hour and a half meeting with them yesterday. You know, we're getting a plan together. But at the moment, nobody knows whether this will even come back.
I know.
It has been spreading around the world. It's something that goes on more in the winter. So the Southern Hemisphere is just getting over their winter. Remember, it's spring in the Southern Hemisphere as it becomes fall here. In the southern part of the United States, there is some flu, but they didn't have it when we did last spring. So nobody knows whether it's already gone or it'll come back again, whether it'll come back the same or different. And incidentally, there's regular seasonal flu to add on top of it.
As I said, the difficulty of
no reason for people to panic. We'll see what happens as we do. We've got a whole procedure to inform the public. Parents can make a decision to keep their kids home if they want, but our Secretary of Health and Human Services and our Secretary of Education and CDC and the New York City folks don't recommend that you do.
Fair enough. We'll wait and see what happens.
And that may change.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll
could change tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we've got a full bank of phones here. 800-321-0710 is the number to ask the questions. They will be next, 8 minutes before 9 o'clock. Coming right back. All right, 5 minutes before 9 o'clock, it's your turn with the mayor for final time till after the election. Let's go right to the telephone.
Wait, before you do,
yes.
My ace press secretary, Stu Loser, informs me that it's possible that the vaccine will be ready by late October rather than late November.
Okay. But again, they're having troubles with it.
Harold Varmus giving a worst-case scenario, we have a right to give a best-case scenario.
There you go. All right, Mr. Mayor, fair enough. Let's start here with Joanne in Brooklyn. Joanne, your question for the mayor. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question concerning the Accessoride program.
Yep.
My mom lives in Brooklyn, and there are no cabs that frequent.
Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% right. And so the idea is for that, in that case, we would hopefully get black cabs that be willing to, you like you call now, and you can reserve one, ask them to come, and they would come. The ones that would be able to do it would be those who spent the money and put the technology in so that you could have the card to swipe, because we have to have some ways of controlling it. But Joanne is exactly right. The yellow cabs tend to be, not totally, but tend to be in Manhattan and even there, midtown and downtown Manhattan. And so the idea would be to see if you can't get black cabs to use it, to provide the service elsewhere. But Joanne, you know, if they don't, anything's better than nothing.
Yeah,
I mean, we have the existing Accessa cab, doesn't work as well as you want, and it's clearly a lot more expensive. So, you know, hopefully we can improve the service for your mother, but it's not going to solve everybody's problem. For example, as I pointed out, these cabs tend not to be handicap accessible. We'd like more to be. We have some regulations, a certain number have to be, but a lot aren't. And so for those that need a handicap accessible car, this doesn't really help them. Maybe down the road it would if the cabs change, but at the moment it isn't. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to do what you can.
Okay, Joanne, thank you very much. Let's see here. Let's go to Jack in West Nyack with an interesting question. Jack, go ahead. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, John? A pleasure to have a chance to talk to you and your honor. My question is directed towards his honor. Back in 1995, your predecessor, Giuliani, didn't allow Arafat to attend that Lincoln Center concert. And now the mayor of Englewood is facing a similar scenario with Gaddafi. I know this is not your job to make a judgment on a local regional level, but how would you do it if Gaddafi wanted to pitch tent in one of the five boroughs?
He did. He wanted to pitch it in Central Park, and we said no. We do not allow tents and people to sleep in Central Park, whether they are leaders of countries or you and me and the average citizens of New York. And no, if he is in New York, we will provide security the way we do for every leader. I'd say for Arafat, too, but he's not coming back, obviously. But we have an obligation to provide security regardless of what we think about their political views or past actions. That's our deal with the United Nations and the State Department. I might point out that the State Department is supposed to pay us the cost, reimburse us. Supposed to. We never get any money. I've talked to Secretary Rice and Secretary Clinton's staff. I don't know if they're brushed it with her, but certainly the staff. They are supposed to pay us to provide that kind of security, and they have not been doing that. But we will provide it. But he cannot pitch a tent in a New York City park. For Englewood, I have no idea what their policies are, and that's up to them.
Is there a reason they don't reimburse the city? Do they just go humming and humming?
Yeah, because, you know.
They can.
They can. That's exactly right. And what we really need is our representatives in Congress to yell and scream in Washington and get us that money. They have sort of stiffed us a little bit on a number of things. We were trying to, if you remember, we had a case where we sued a bunch of countries were going to pay us.
Right, taxes.
Taxes, and then the State Department walked away from it.
Mr. Mayor, that's it for us. I will see you in after November, the election, I
after
trust.
After November. Thanks, John. Thanks for your hospitality. And I will be listening.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And good luck to you.